What's going on, guys? Welcome to another episode of Healthspan Academy. I'm your host, Craig Sheerhart, and joining me today is Dr. Ray Gorman, who is a physical therapist. He started his academic career with a Bachelor of Science in Community Health Science from University of Nevada, Reno, and then went on to get a Doctor of Physical Therapy from Touro University, Nevada, and then 2 years worked as a physical therapist. And for the past 7 years, he's been the owner and founder of Engage Movement and Physical Performance. So we're going to talk a lot about movement quality, rehab, how he helps his clients and his coaches, and go from there. Ray, thanks for joining me today, man.
Craig, thank you so much for having me.
Cheers. Well, I want to start this conversation with how physical therapy became into your life. Was it like sports heavy growing up? Was it like always an interest? Was it kind of thrust upon you? Talk me through that whole, how everything unfolded.
I've got a very stereotypical physical therapy story for me. So
fair enough.
Starting out in undergrad, I knew I wanted to be in the health field, but I didn't know where.
Yeah.
Took my first biochemistry course and quickly realized that 8 years of that kind of medicine was not really what I wanted to invest in as an 18-year-old.
Organic chem was just not stimulating.
I actually never took organic chem, but think that one would have done really well for me. I like the patterns and stuff like that. It was the biochemistry that was like, I'm good. So I kind of dabbled around a few different majors, ended up in what was called community health science, which was kind of your allied health field.
Yeah.
Met a lot of the prereqs, exercise science. And also I had a big interest in psychology and business.
Oh, cool.
And so I ended up minoring in those two things throughout my journey.
That's awesome.
But in undergrad, I got hurt.
Yeah.
So I tore my ACL.
Oh, yikes.
And that was an excellent experience for me to go through kind of the medical realm as a patient.
Right.
I've never
heard an ACL described as an excellent experience.
So well,
that's an interesting twist on it. But yeah, I know what you mean.
For me, it was a good one. I think that being on the patient side of the table, it was like I understood what my clients were dealing with. I understood the emotional side of it. I understood the ups and downs.
Yeah.
And then that kind of led me into, going to PT school and merging what became my two passions was the CrossFit community and the physical therapy space.
I love that. Yeah. I think like a lot of the best rehab / coaches are people that have just like had every injury you can imagine. So they're like, okay, I know what you're feeling right now. This is literally everything I tried. Let's try a bit of that. And then also like from an empathy standpoint, you understand like it's not just a physical thing. There's an emotional thing with the injuries and stuff like that too. So
the physical stuff is easy.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, the mental stuff that comes along with it is where the challenge is.
Yeah. Especially if it's like a potential career on the line, right? When you're talking about like semi-pro athletes or pro athletes or even varsity athletes, it's crazy. So who were the first mentors as you kind of fell into the industry in fitness and mobility?
I definitely come from the K-Star wave.
Oh, nice.
It's funny. I was actually just at a conference with him a couple weeks, 2 weeks ago.
Cool.
And I saw that you just interviewed him as well. So
yeah.
He's a great dude. And
Sure.
Really was kind of the pioneer for physical therapists like me to say, hey, how are we going to integrate ourselves in this higher level of fitness experience.
Yeah.
And in this wave of fitness that when done correctly and when done with a little bit of guidance really can be powerful. So,
for sure.
I went to an old school MWOD seminar when he was a subject matter expert for CrossFit.
Nice.
And have always kind of followed along. And then my company kind of came about and I operated in a gym for a long time.
That's awesome.
And then evolved into this remote model.
So, cool. Yeah. I took that course. When was it? The end of 2013, I think. And I was at the course where he was, I think it was the first one he didn't actually teach. He was like off coaching the Jets or something. So it was like, it was Roop and the rest of the group, and Teresa and stuff like that, but it's still an amazing course. Like when you're like just getting started and like everyone's a doctor in physical therapy, you're just like absorbing everything like a sponge. They're like all miniature case stars that are teaching in the course. Super cool course. Yeah. I love that.
The cool thing about it is it starts to give you a framework of how you can view an experiment.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that has been always kind of the thing that I've taken from my interactions within any Con Ed course that I've gone to is like, what's their framework to kind of work through, and what do I want to take with me and what do I want to leave behind?
Yeah. I love that. To using the gym as your playground, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Very cool. So getting into some of the technical pieces of physical therapy, one of the things I think people first struggle with as an athlete and as a coach is understanding the difference between soreness and injury. What are the types of things we can keep moving to, even where it is better to kind of keep moving through it? Whereas we may have to like take a step back or actually even need like treatment or intervention at some point. How do you start those conversations and figure out whether an athlete is sore or injured?
I think the big takeaway there is the expectation of what we did.
Right.
So for example, when I work out, I don't expect to be injured. Mm. I don't expect to get injured working out, but it can happen.
Yeah.
And I do expect to have some degree of soreness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where I think the fitness industry has a really awesome opportunity is to start understanding that that is a process that clients need to learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think it's massively key. So when somebody comes in for their first workout, we're typically trying to hook them with almost too much intensity or too much stimulus.
Mm-hmm.
And while I understand the intent behind that, we have to learn what can happen psychologically if somebody is too sore, if that soreness is perceived as something is wrong.
Yeah.
So we've got to teach it a little bit. We've got to acclimate to it.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think like otherwise it's like you talk about that mental piece, it's just deflating. Like if someone is like thinking they can go through it and just push through the pain, right? And they're just making things worse. That just, it becomes more problematic. So let's talk about the assessment piece a little bit. Cause this is like as a coach, we can assess position. We can't assess pathology. As a therapist, you're kind of like in between where a doctor would be and sort of in terms of the assessment. Talk me through that assessment process, looking through a therapist lens versus looking through a coach lens versus looking for movement versus pathology.
I think that it's actually starting to become more blurred.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, so long as we respect where we need to elevate the client to the next tier of service or to the next tier of care.
Mm-hmm.
The way that I kind of look at it is we all need to understand. Like we all need to understand.
Yeah.
So if a client that I'm working with as a therapist is also working out into the gym, in their gym, I would hope that the coach was asking questions about what was going wrong and asking about, you know, was there a diagnosis, not necessarily to treat it, but to understand how to manage that client in that moment for that workout throughout the fitness journey.
Yeah.
And so I really encourage coaches to become curious and learn about that and understand that, you know, like kind of where I draw the line, because I teach both coaches and rehab professionals.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I teach them stuff that is very similar conceptually.
Mm-hmm.
Where the scope line, I think, is really drawn in the sand is like, I'm not treating your injury as a coach.
Right. Exactly.
I am manipulating variables that are under my scope as a coach.
Yeah.
And if the byproduct is you're able to train without pain, you're able to train without discomfort, or maybe those symptoms resolve.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I love that. And so that's key, right? And one of the things that like a light bulb moment for me when I really wanted to get into coaching is that there's nobody that spends more time with the athlete than the coach. So like you have so much opportunity. It is your playground, you know, whether assuming like, you know enough not to hurt people, you can try tons of stuff. And especially you have a good relationship with the therapist and understand like the diagnostic pieces, maybe not too diagnosed, but understanding how it works. It's super key. And at the end of the day, the athlete's going to benefit hugely from that.
Agree. And it's understanding the limits, right? Yeah. That's really what we're looking for from the coaching lens. And I mean, and the rehab lens, we're trying to understand the limits.
Yeah.
And so if a coach is equipped with some tools to say, well, what are the limits and what's the current capacity of this client? If I stay within that realm for ranges of motion or for strength, for example, while they're rehabbing an injury, or maybe while they're working through some discomfort, then I can make a massive impact on them and I can keep them training.
For sure.
And it's really just understanding where do you need to pull that person out of what the normal fitness experience is,
yeah,
to decrease the volume, allow them to reacclimate, and then reintegrate them back in.
Yeah, I love that. You're kind of like wearing all the hats as the coach to some degree. You're like 1% therapist, physical therapist, 30% mental therapist, and then everything in between, right?
Yeah. That's very true. I mean, the mental side of training is an entire rabbit hole that we can go down.
Yeah.
We have to understand how the attributes of mindset and lifestyle play into the decisions that your clients make within the gym. That's massive.
Yeah, for sure. Know? Yeah. So let's talk about the principle of pain. I think there's different schools of thought. You hear like most commonly probably let pain as your guide. And I think that's probably good advice. Is there a limit to that? Is there exceptions when we talk about using pain as a guide? Do people do we have to be conscious of what their pain threshold is, or what's your take on that?
Yeah. So, I mean, look, pain is extremely complex. Mm-hmm. I truly am in the biopsychosocial model with mm-hmm. how I teach things and how I explain things. And, you know, some of it is biology and mechanics. Some of it is psychology, and some of it is the social experiences that we go through that kind of impact it, which is why it's so hard to scale something, because we have so many variables that are contextual to the person.
Yeah, exactly.
That we really need to like look back and say, how do I make this pain experience, which is already unique to them, mm-hmm. also unique to their context?
Right.
Right. So in understanding that, it's, well, what are the things that I can look at that I think contributes?
Right.
Ranges of motion. Okay, that's not predictive, mm-hmm. but it helps me understand the guidelines.
Sure.
Do they need strength in a certain pattern? Mm-hmm. Do they need technique in a certain pattern? Are there simply just behaviors of, I think I need to train at high intensity 5 days a week to get results?
Yeah.
Like, there's not going to be any corrective program in the world that fixes that.
Yeah, exactly.
We've got to get into the mindset of the person, and we've really got to understand like psychologically where in that journey it kind of led them.
Yeah, and just working within the dynamics of the individual.
Understanding, I think, is the key.
Yeah.
Right? Whenever I'm talking with somebody, it's like, we're not going to fix this. Mm-hmm. That's not the goal. The goal is to understand it.
Yeah.
Because fixing implies that something is broken, and that's just not the way the pain experience works.
Yeah.
So I teach it more like it's an alarm. Mm-hmm. It kind of tells us something's up.
Right.
And if you have an alarm in your house, it's designed to go off when somebody breaks in.
Yeah.
People who start to develop these chronic pain patterns, they're hypersensitive mm-hmm. to that alarm system. So instead of someone breaking in, it's the wind's blowing.
Yeah.
And that system is going off.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good analogy. I love that.
And we've got to decrease it, right? We've got to allow them to acclimate to the experience. And I do let my clients train with a little pain or discomfort if they're under my care or the care of one of the coaches or rehab professionals that I work with.
Yeah.
And typically that's like I let them go up to like a 5 out of 10.
Yeah.
That's not getting worse with activity. Mm-hmm. That resolves back to baseline within 24 to 48 hours.
Yeah.
And isn't new.
Yeah. I love that. I think that's a really key point, is it's not necessarily the stimulus. It's the trend. Is it, improving? Is it getting worse? Is it staying the same?
That's why I use the term understand.
Yeah.
Right. We've got to allow some of it to exist, and we can't just pull the parachute every time.
Yeah.
It pops up.
It's true. People are, I think, more resilient than they realize sometimes too. And like living with that little bit of pain, eventually your body's just like, we're moving. This is just what we're doing. We're going to figure it out. Right. And that motion kind of helps you solve the issue.
There's no better moment than working with somebody and them not even realizing they did something and didn't have the same discomfort. Right.
So true.
And this is why I'm huge with the language that you should use with your clients. We don't need to cause issues that don't exist.
Yeah, for sure.
I try really hard to never associate an if this, then that.
Yeah.
Because of what that can do to the psychology of the person.
True. And so it's so individualized anyways. There are no definitive universal principles, right? There's just like general theory and I guess general principles, but not like universal principles.
Well, it's the art of the rehab science.
Yeah.
Right. And anybody that follows me on Instagram will know my hashtag is always context matters.
Yeah.
Because we need more information than we're giving. Like I need to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
I need to know if you're sleeping. I need to know what your work schedule is.
Yes.
I need to know what your expectations are.
Yeah. Especially in the context of the pandemic now, just like a lot, so many issues are rooted mentally and expressing themselves physically. Right. So context is key.
Well, we live in a hustle and grind culture.
Yeah.
And while there are periods of time where we can sustain doing that, we also need to take a mental deload every once in a while. And there's
true.
Yeah. There's so many parallels to training, business, life that, you know, when somebody works with me, it's like, those are the things we're going to talk about because that's the low hanging fruit.
Yeah. I love that. So that kind of is a nice segue into the rest piece. Mm. And, I think the sort of universal, I don't want to say universal, but the common theme was like, you're hurt, let's rest it. And now you're starting to see more, let's keep moving in this, in whatever capacity we can. How do you prescribe the principles of rest for your athletes and your coaches? How do those conversations look?
Yeah. So I think rest in general is needed in the process, right? Like as far as like with training, I think too often we have people that are looking for what they're considering an active recovery day, which like I'm all for those, but the way that I use them and the way that I teach them is very intentional. Because we can't just say, oh, I'm going to hop on the rower and do 20 minutes of rowing and that's going to be an active rest day. Well, the way that I'm looking at that as a coach and physical therapist is like, well, that's 20 minutes of cyclic ankle dorsiflexion, knee flexion, hip flexion, lumbar hinging that we don't accommodate for. And then if the day before was hinging or the day after is hinging, and then we're like, why is my back so sore today?
Yeah.
Well, you were on the rower for 20 minutes yesterday, you know, and even though it's low intensity, like our tissues need time to break down and build back up,
And that looks different for every athlete. I think there's
probably,
you know, for a CrossFit Games athlete, that's a perfect active recovery day, right? Especially because they're probably doing mobility to open up the hips and count for all the hinging and maybe the bad lumbar positions on the rower and that kind of stuff. But like for a layperson or someone that's in their 60s has never worked out before, probably not a good option, right?
Well, it's understanding the goal, right? Yeah. Like for a CrossFit Games athlete, that might have more than one intent of active recovery. It actually might have just volume accumulation at a lower intensity.
True.
And so one of the things that I teach coaches and rehab professionals that I work with is like, you're the chemist.
Yeah.
Right. And the way that your client reacts is based on what you program or what you provide.
For sure.
So when I'm trying to figure out a work rest profile for a client, it's based off experimentation. It's what are their goals? How many days a week are they looking to train? And then how can I make the training profile unique for them? Can I start them on 3 days on, 1 day off? Can I move them to 2 days on, 1 day off?
Yeah.
Do they need to go 1 day on, 1 day off?
Yeah.
You have so many options where, you know, with the macro of rest. And then if somebody's injured, it depends on, is it inflammatory or is it degenerative?
Right.
You know, if it's inflammatory, somebody's got a cranky shoulder, we want to keep them moving in the gym, but we've got to allow like some local area rest to that joint. And that just might mean lower intensity, very, you know, graded movement with a purpose versus we're just going to have them do push press because we wanted to keep it moving. Like that wouldn't work.
That's what's programmed today. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I love that. So let's get into the mission behind Engage Movement. So you work with athletes, you work with coaches, and that's always an interesting kind of dynamic in the three of them. What is the overall mission of the business itself?
So I actually don't work with that many athletes anymore. Okay. I've actually moved out of that realm. I have about three clients that I still program for that I've programmed for a long time.
Okay.
But I've really shifted the mission to bridge the gap between rehab and performance or fitness.
Okay.
Like, cool. How do we get the person back from physical therapy or from whatever they were dealing with integrated back in the gym?
Yep.
Where the journey, like the training, the rehab actually starts to look like training.
Right.
I love and that. The best medium for that is by offering some sort of programming transition where you can actually ramp up return to sport volume without having your clients come into the clinic 3 days a week.
Yeah.
And by allowing them to start to build up and reacclimate to volume in their gym or in their facility. Mm-hmm. To the point where there will be a coach takeover. You know, that's the journey.
Yeah. I love that. And so even though you're working directly with coaches, you're still kind of coaching the coaches to coach the athlete. So
correct.
And there's accountability levels at all of that, right? So you're kind of dividing the system, giving the coaches the tools, kind of to work with the athletes. The athletes need to do the work. The coaches kind of need to monitor the athletes and relay back to you. So talk about that. The key pieces to the role of each the therapist slash athlete slash coach dynamic.
So the non-negotiable is that both sides have to be willing to do the work. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of something that you said there, right? The best program in the world doesn't work if it doesn't, if the athlete doesn't do it.
Yeah.
So it's like we've got to have this mutual understanding of when we commit to work together, that means I'm ready to commit to you. And you're ready to commit to yourself to give me the appropriate feedback to allow me to help you decision make. And that's really where the art of it comes in is, look, anybody can go online and find a template and follow it.
Yeah.
Right. But there's no nuance in the template. It's cut and dry. It's linear progression. It's black and white.
It's just static. Yeah.
And the role of the coach or the guide, if that's a rehab professional, is really to dial in and break down the nuance of saying, does my client need to regress because I gave them a little bit too much dose?
Yeah.
No problem. Like that's a learning experience for everybody.
For sure.
Does my client need to continue to acclimate, in which I may not change the volume for this day, but I then need to communicate that? Or is my client ready for progression?
Right.
And again, when I talk about a framework, it's like, how did they respond? Your decision tree really only goes to one of three ways.
Yeah.
Regress, repeat, progress.
True. Yeah.
And then it's just different variables that we're looking to tinker with. Depth, intensity, speed. What are we trying to return them to from a movement perspective? CrossFit's complicated where there's a lot of moving parts, but that's what I think makes it kind of fun.
For sure. So you kind of alluded to this a little bit in the methodology. How does that programming template look? Is like, you obviously have certain exercises that are kind of the low hanging fruit, but there's principles below that. Where do you start with an athlete and start to bridge the gap in the programming model?
So I use what's called a client attribute profile.
Okay.
And it's essentially seven attributes that I'm looking at in kind of the athletic or fitness realm. So it's passive range of motion, active range of motion, a strength profile for the client, understanding where they're strong, where there's deficiencies, understanding endurance, lifestyle, technique, and mindset. So I'm taking those seven things and I'm creating a picture.
Yeah.
Right. I'm creating a profile for this person of like, if we were building a football team, an American football team, right? Not soccer.
Yeah.
We wouldn't put the lineman at the wide receiver. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. We wouldn't put the lineman at the wide receiver position.
Yeah.
Because we need it. We need that person on the line. There's a certain attribute characteristic to being a lineman.
Yeah.
So the same can be said of like, well, what are the goals of this person? How do I understand that? A power lifter has very different needs and has a very different range of motion profile than a CrossFitter needs.
Yeah.
Because having less range of motion as a power lifter can actually give you a mechanical advantage.
True.
So if I'm coming in as the coach, I don't necessarily want to increase their range. I want to help offset what's going on with them.
Improve their desired kind of
improve the understand the context.
Yeah.
And then I also use what's called stress capacity. So how are all of the external factors from the world building up as internal stressors that we need to hold?
Right.
We don't know the difference between physical and emotional stress. Mm-hmm. Our body just knows it as stress.
Yeah.
So those are the two principles that kind of allow me to say, what's the picture of this athlete look like? What's the attribute profile? What are the stressors coming in? Mm-hmm. How can I then make decisions to accommodate for what needs to be done, how they need to perform, and maybe what needs to be removed?
Yeah. So as you're talking that through, I'm just thinking like all the different assessment tools you have out there, and probably the more variables you add, the like the deeper you can go into the woods, right?
Yeah.
How do you handle the assessment piece? Do you keep it narrowed to their specific, if there's an injury or their specific goals, or, and then how often do you reassess?
I think it depends on how specific we're looking to get and what problem we're looking to solve.
Right.
So I look at assessments as we're talking about sensitivity versus specificity. Mm-hmm. Something like assessing somebody's squat, for example, if I'm looking at the technique of their squat and I see something is going on, like for example, they're more in a hinge. Mm-hmm. That's sensitive to telling me something is going on in the squat.
Yeah.
It's not specific to telling me what. So now I need to go and look at, well, is it their ankle range of motion? Yeah. Is it their hip range of motion? Mm-hmm. Is it how they've learned how to squat?
Yeah.
Is it their pattern preference that maybe they know how to squat, but they just prefer to be in a hinge?
Yeah.
Well, I need to take that context and I need to create, you know, what will help get them from point A to point B.
Right.
And so I teach my assessment as more of a flexible assessment where we've got this movement screen. We can piece it out and we can say, all right, well, let's look at your shoulder. Mm-hmm. We can strength test your shoulder.
Yeah.
And then as we're going along, we can dose in other pieces of the assessment process as we're resolving kind of the primary concern. Mm-hmm. And I think too often, too many systems are throwing all this information front loaded.
Yeah.
Instead of expanding the time frame and being like, I'm going to need a month to learn about working with you.
Yeah, true enough. I think that's a smart way to handle it. So then you kind of at the top talked about blurring the lines between training and prehab. And so is that a progression piece? Is that built into the assessment dynamics? I mean, I assume all that has got to be dynamics or sort of case by case, or how do you work someone from a rehab stance into like regular training, and how do they progress through that? Just give me a snapshot.
I think the big thing is knowing your scope and really understanding, are the variables that I'm manipulating and the language that I'm using, is that within my scope? And I think that's really important, especially for coaches out there. Mm-hmm. But how that's going to look is essentially on this timeline, there's going to be a phase where the physical therapist or the rehab professional says, all right, Craig, you're good to go back into the gym. And we can't just say like, and when you go back, just take it easy, man.
Yeah.
And you're going to be like, what the hell does that mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, does that mean I can hang on a bar? Does that mean I can kip on it? Does that mean if I could do 10 ring muscle ups, I could do 10 kipping pull ups?
They need something specific to take with them.
They need something that is reconditioning, that is returning to sport where the tissue tolerance is the barrier.
That next step.
So what's basically happening when somebody is rehabbing an injury is their physical capacity, their overall capacity is much greater than their tissue capacity for the issue that they're rehabbing. Right. So our job as coaches and rehab professionals is reconditioning the tissues which are in question, reacclimating them to volume, intensity, load, to allow them to catch up, where it's not like, oh, I feel good today, I'm just going to test and see where I'm at.
Yeah, fair enough.
And if if you look at the rehab journey, it kind of peaks and then the needs kind of come back down. And as they get closer to return to sport, it actually needs to ramp back up.
Right. Yeah.
And that's where the traditional rehab model, I think, starts to fail, because clients are feeling better. They don't perceive that they need us. Mm-hmm. And I think it's our job to give them a different programming vehicle to perform the work.
Yeah. Because that's like, you talk about that mental piece, that's just that much more deflating. If you've been through this whole process, you think you're getting better and you're feeling good, and you get back and you're training independently again, say you are without your coach, and then it's like, oh man, what did I even bother doing all this for? So you kind of like, you got to keep tabs on people and have systems in place so that you're still staying aware of their progress to some degree. And I think that's a nice distinction as well with the coach, is that assuming they're a member of your gym, you're going to see them more regularly. You get that extra information that maybe a physio doesn't get.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And that's where the communication comes into play.
Yeah.
You know, like I work with, back when I was practicing, I worked with many coaches, and I said, hey, like, I'm going to reach out to your coach and kind of tell them where you're at so that they can start to take over.
Yeah.
And that's why this really doesn't have to become a turf war. It has to become a team.
Yeah.
And it has to become, like, again, a coach knowing where they can make adjustments. And if the byproduct of that, if a smarter training program gets somebody out of pain, I don't have a problem with that as a physical therapist. Mm-hmm. Like, I really don't.
Yeah.
If they're moderating exercise and volume and ranges of motion, amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, as long as it's hitting their goals. It's more than one way to do it, right?
Totally. Totally.
Yeah. I love this. So what are the next steps for Engage Movement this next year? Do you have other business initiatives, or how does that look?
So one of the things that we were kind of talking about was this hybridization of the fitness and rehab industry. And that's kind of a big initiative that I'm pushing towards. I recently spoke at a conference and hosted a roundtable about how you could add remote programming to your process to kind of solve some of the problems that we can't solve in the clinic, or that we can't adequately solve in the clinic. Mm-hmm. And really start to increase the value of the service that you deliver and the amount of touch points that your clients can get.
Yeah.
Especially in a healthcare model that, you know, is kind of not really solving the problems that performance clients and performance athletes really need.
Yeah, it's healthcare.
Yeah,
sick care.
Yeah, we need to be the advocate for that. Yeah. And and nobody's coming to save you. I'm here to help the coaches and rehab professionals that want to save themselves.
I love that. Cool. Let's talk about your own personal habits a little bit, Ray. I think, like, we are kind of through a pandemic, and regardless of what that's looked like for you, it's been challenging for everybody. So
yeah.
And when we talk about health and fitness, there's different, I mean, we can be pulled in 10 different directions ourselves. What's at the top of your list of health and fitness priorities, and what do your habits look like around that?
I think the biggest piece of information that I kind of learned from all this is stop trying to do what everybody tells you you need to do and start trying to understand what you need.
Yeah.
So the recipe for burnout is trying to enact somebody else's process and decision-making.
Yeah.
And so the big things that kind of happened for me were, you know, I went from working 10, 12 hour days, and I went from, you know, the hustle and grind culture to, like, maybe that's not really what's important for me.
Yeah.
And maybe actually starting my day later is what I need for my self-care. Maybe going out and starting my morning with a walk and then being able to prioritize my fitness will actually allow me to show up better in my business.
Yeah. Can't pour from an empty cup.
Oh man. And that's really been the biggest lesson of this is, like, I stopped listening to what everyone told me I couldn't do. And I started proving to myself that I could do what I thought I could do.
That's awesome.
And I think that's massive for coaches out there and rehab professionals who are, you know, doing all this extra stuff and not feeling fulfilled on it. That's the person that I want to work with. I want to say, how can we help you figure out how to feel fulfilled?
Yeah. I love that. Awesome. Well, Ray, it's been an awesome chat. Appreciate the time, man.
Craig, it's been great. Thank you for having me.
Cheers. All right. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Healthspan Academy, guys. We'll see you next time. Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for tuning in today. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Thank you so much for supporting this channel. This has been a fun project. We are growing in viewership every single week, and we obviously couldn't do that without you. So thank you for continuing to tune in. I really hope you're getting value out of the programming and the content. Just wanted to give you a heads up. I've been working on a book on health and longevity the last couple of years, been collaborating with my colleague, Dr. Dan Vitale, who's an expert in the field as well. And we've basically just kind of summarized the literature, some of the techniques that we found really useful in the world of biohacking, what our exercise regimen looks like, what's, you know, cardio type stuff is going to help us live longer and healthier, mobility work, nutrition. We've covered the whole spectrum, everything that you can basically be in control of in your health and fitness kind of moving forward to help you live as healthily as possible for as long as possible. And it's available free for download. So if you click on the YouTube banner, you'll see a link to download the blueprint. It's also on our Instagram profile or on the website. You can click on fivepillarmethod.com/optimize to get your free copy of the book. And I hope you enjoy it. Hope you're keeping well. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.